Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is February 22nd, 2022. 2-2-2-2-2. Did you notice that? 2-2-2-2-2. Does that mean anything? Eric the Tech, how are you? Doing well?
Good. Good.
Yeah. You okay?
Good.
No?
I got to. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
The only thing throwing me off is that zero in there.
Well, zeros don't count. So I want to thank everyone for your patience and your prayers. Was down pretty hard this weekend, yesterday, and now back up. Randy Taylor, by the way. Please keep him in your prayers. He's extremely ill, and I'm not going to expand on that except to say he's ill. And he's tough, though. He's going to come back. He'll be back. It's a medical issue, and he'll be back. A lot of things happened since we last spoke, haven't they? Including and especially the issue with Canada. And as you know, of course, Parliament passed the Emergency Measures Act. Initially, martial law, dictatorship was created in Canada. And over the weekend, you saw the results of the proclamation by dictator Justin Castro Trudeau. You saw people, peaceful protesters, being beaten, being stomped, being manhandled. You saw really a Gestapo-like atmosphere. If you were watching a Gestapo-like atmosphere play out, and it's something that you've got to really appreciate, that our freedom is really less than, at this point, a generation away, to paraphrase Ronald Reagan. Now, I want to make an opening statement, if I can call it that. In my sickness-induced haze, as I was watching the images play out before me and seeing what was happening and also getting communications about what was happening from the ground, and also getting information about what is coming here to the United States, I began reading the writings of Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine, to me, is one of the most prolific, one of my favorite authors. And I say authors, he's more of a activist, political revolutionary of the American Revolution on the side of freedom. And in that spirit, I wrote this. And it's posted at HagmanReport.com. And folks, I would ask, please, 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 do me a favor. Access this, print it, pass it out, share it. Please, if you like it, if you agree with it, then share it. Because this is my assessment. If Thomas Paine were alive today, and suddenly awakened from, a long slumber that allowed things to get to where it's at today, I believe that he would feel the same. But one of his, citing Thomas Paine, those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. Now, I've written this. There are few hinge moments in history that cannot be subject to overstatement. This is one. I write this first message in the spirit of Thomas Paine, an activist in revolutionary politics, at which time we again find ourselves, however, on a larger scale. Let us remember that unlimited power belongs only to God. And here's my message. perhaps we should be thankful for those behind the COVID ruse, the COVID-related mandates, those who implemented them, and those who forced their compliance. Never has a single event in modern history so conspicuously laid bare the inherent evil intent, hubris, and blatant hypocrisy of national and world leaders, the elected and unelected, corporate entities, the media, the overseers of our children, and others tasked with the implementation of their madness. What once was spoken of only in hushed tones and was relentlessly mocked, the existence of a cabal so despicably evil, is now being spoken to the world. Their wiles, their deviant stratagems, injurious to all areas of our lives and within the entire fabric of our moral societies, has been brought to public display. They and their wretched minions have infiltrated every place of our existence in Western society. They are forcing us into our own cruel and sadistic destruction with demonic delight, while laughing and mocking our dutiful compliance. Anyone who sees not the full extent of the evil that threatens them is either a charlatan or a fool. Let them suffer in their wickedness or naivete unlamented without regret. They have ignited the slow-burning latent embers of the steely resolve of a disparate population across the continents. These so-called enlightened ones, with their self-appointed arbiters of what is true and factual, despite our unmistaken perception and rational intellects, have awakened an unrequited desire to wrest back our God-given rights and freedoms from their evil designs, to forever banish us from society, to enslave us, and to rob us of our godly inheritance. We desire to live free or die in this noble quest, and so we shall, for there are no acceptable alternatives. We inherited the ability to live free, through the blood and toil of our forefathers. Yet we've squandered our inheritance through our failures, including our unwillingness to risk our immediate comforts or our reputations, and our ill-fated tolerance of countless irrational absurdities. Perhaps it should be with gratitude that we now have been wrested from our slumber and away from the comforts that we once considered secure. Like our comfort, our civility is our vice. Every globalist and each criminal conspirator doing their bidding, whether freely or reluctantly, is a cuckold of the devil himself. The architects of our enslavement, wherever they exist, must be held to account by the people, if it must be. Let it be known that a peaceful coexistence with evil is impossible, and therefore a permanent reconciliation is inevitable. So too are the poltroons, the enablers, the enforcers, those who act under the influence of self-interest. Their cowardice and cruelty feeds from the trough of passivity and complacence. They will starve and wither when confronted with the resolve of the righteous. No longer shall we be compelled to tolerate the absurd, the ungodly, and the slow poisoning of our progeny, whether the latter is done without consent in the literal or ensconced in the ridiculous redefinitions that defy actual science, biology, morality, and settled norms. The same architects of faux enlightenment are involved in both and all that mock science and virtue. It is now time not to decide, but to decide to act. Just as our brothers and sisters have suffered and been given no quarter for standing up, speaking up, and showing up, we must offer the architects of fear and captivity no quarter. And I close by citing Thomas Paine, "If there must be trouble, let it be in my day, that my child may have peace." And this single reflection, well applied, is sufficient to awaken every man to duty. May God in heaven guide our steps. I hope that resonates with you, and I hope that that's worthy of your time and you're spreading that to everyone you know. Is that a call to action? It is. Is that a call to arms? If need be. Is that a call to revolution? You tell me. Have we not revolted for less? I was speaking with Steve Quayle earlier this morning, and we were talking about where we're at as a nation, really as a world, but specifically as a nation. And, you know, he said, gone is the repentance. There's repentance from the public in the current day is absent. And without repentance, there is no restoration. You can see how quickly our morality has gone. We've allowed, we've tolerated too much. Coach Dave Dobmeyer, this is one of my favorite quotes from Coach Dave Dobmeyer, is about tolerance. You know, we are too tolerant. It's not that we're intolerant. It's that we're too tolerant, paraphrasing Coach Dave. We're too tolerant of the murdering of unborn children. We've been too tolerant of same-sex marriage, the redefinition of biological sexes and genders to be accurate. We're too tolerant of the grooming of our children. We're too tolerant of the immorality that's so pervasive in our society today. And in our conversations, Steve and I were talking, is this not God's judgment upon his people? Look, I don't know. I'm just conversationally talking about it. Are we not suffering God's judgment for not standing up and speaking out? You know, the people on the right, the Republicans or the conservatives, specifically the conservatives in lawmakers, certainly put on a good act, don't they? But what of that act? What are the results from that act? From their words and whatever deeds in the Senate chambers or the House chambers? Where are we at? Has there been any justice meted out? Have there been any changes made? I see nothing. The same people have evaded criminal prosecution that should be in prison. Which brings me to mind one thing. Yesterday was the second anniversary of the death of Phil Haney, the murder of Phil Haney. Phil Haney, I don't know how many people remember him. He was on our program. Of course, YouTube took off all of the programs that we had him on. I might have a hard copy saved of one of his shows, but we spoke off air, Phil Haney, myself. He's a great guy, and he was coming out with a book, and his personal life was just fantastic. And of course, he supposedly committed suicide with a rifle again 2 years ago yesterday. There was a he would always. And I'm okay, I think, with saying this. He confided in me that he always had kept with him and wore around his neck a thumb drive of information. Of course, when they found him, the thumb drive and the necklace, if you will, it was gone, was missing from his body. How many more deaths like that are we going to accept? How many more times are we going to play nice with the people who have no problem murdering you or others? our friends. If we really believe that the jabs, the shots, are a slow poison, why then are we not taking to the streets? And I'm not talking about a peaceful protest. Why then are we not avenging the deaths of our loved ones and disabling of our loved ones if we believe that? Is this a matter of not believing what we say or what we hear other people say? Or is this a situation where, I don't want to risk the comfort of my home or whatever, you know, my lifestyle. I don't want to risk my job. I don't want to speak out. It's just a mask. It's just a jab. It's just an edict. It's just a mandate. It's just this. It's just that. Boy, we're great at making excuses, aren't we? Meanwhile, we get the crap kicked out of us by trying to play nice, by trying to play on their game board. Exhibit A, I suppose, would be what you had seen over the weekend. If you don't think, folks, that's coming here, believe me, it is coming here to the United States. It's already here. It hasn't been declared. We have it through the NDAA. We have it through various mandates. But I want to show you, we can go to page 2 on the show notes for today. And I just want to address this briefly because I'm sure people have seen this and talked about this and understand this and what it means. The Canadian communists and socialists unite to declare support for emergency war declaration against Canadian citizens. Now, Parliament approved this emergency act 185 to 151, and I watched the vote live again in my stupor and haze last night. And I watched as the NDP sold out, as the, although the one particular party sold out. This on Conservative Treehouse, referencing here by Sundance. The communists, I'm sorry, not the NDP party. My apologies. The NDP party, the communists and socialists, the LPC. What they did was they united in the Canadian House of Parliament to vote their support for Castro Jr.'s deployment of the Emergency War Measures Act. Now, of course, it's just called the Emergency Measures Act. The War Act, Emergency, or the War Measures Act was renamed to the Emergency, but I digress. It's the same thing. But you got a taste of what this will do. There are so many videos, whether they were live streamed, and then you would watch as YouTube and other, well, specifically YouTube, but the social networking sites would cut off the live feeds. And it was interesting because the iconic coffee shop, and I'm kind of digressing here, the iconic coffee shop up there, the owners who served the truckers like McDonald's and like Tim Hortons, were visited by the brown shirts. Did you see that? Where the brown shirts wanted in, they threatened to bust the window of the door open so they can come in and serve notice to the iconic cafe, the owners, ostensibly to charge them with violating some sort of mask ordinance or community, you know, for the good of all safety ordinance. But the bottom line is they wanted to arrest them, and they are, it's my understanding, going to charge them with some sort of supporting the truckers for simply serving them. That's where we're at today. Folks, I can guarantee it. I can guarantee as I sit here today, we're only 3 weeks behind in this country, in the United States. And in that 3 weeks, I ask that you hit your knees every night and pray for guidance. Pray for the guidance. Pray for God's guidance. Because, again, to not act is to act. I want to know what you're going to do. I know what I'm going to do. It would be great if we could do it together, united as a people. You know, if you want to know what people are thinking in this country, page 3 should give you a little hope. It's not written that way, but page 3 in the show notes. This on the Daily Wire. Exclusive poll. Majority of Democrats back Trudeau's crackdown, freezing accounts of truckers. Wow, that's a big surprise. Trafalgar Group ran a poll showing that 55% of likely general election voters disapprove of Trudeau's handling of the protesters. That's en masse. 55% disapprove. But 35% approve of Trudeau's heavy-handed tactics, and 10% said they were unaware of what was happening north of the U.S. border. So the 10% go back to sleep. Go back to your slumber. Go back to your perfect little NPC, NFT, whatever, world. Go back to your masked oblivion. Because you would be a liability as opposed to an asset in the fight for freedom. If you want to know what's going to happen as the convoy heads east to Washington, D.C. Oh, you didn't hear about that? Of course you heard about that. If you're tuned into this show, you know we've got a freedom convoy of our own headed to D.C. And the left is scared. Because when people realize that we can win simply on the numbers, the left is going to have to resort to the tactics of Castro Jr. And if we allow it, then we deserve everything that's coming to us. The poll and explanation is available in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. Now, I'm going to show you this. The stakes that we're playing for are much bigger than just, well, it never was about our health. It was never about vaccine mandates or vaccine passports or masks or this or that. It was never about the trivial. It was about the huge picture, the big picture. I want to show you this. It's a two-minute clip. This is what the left, what the globalists, what the Party of Davos, what the World Economic Forum, what the people that we must engage in a dramatic and decisive fight, what they are trying to do to God's creation. Think about this. The Party of Davos, the World Economic Forum, the Trudeaus, or Castro Jr., the Chrystia Freelands, the Bidens, and the Obamas, and all of the members of Klaus Schwab's little club have declared war against God's creation, against you, and against me, and against every one of our children. So you decide, after watching this, you decide if the fight is worth engaging, or if it's not worth risking the comfort of your home or your job, or if it's not worth, or if you can come up with an excuse to sit this one out. Watch this.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens, because in the coming generations, we will learn how to engineer bodies and brains and minds. Now, how exactly will the future masters of the planet look like? This will be decided by the people who own the data. Now, why is data so important? It's important because we've reached the point when we can hack not just computers, we can hack human beings and other organisms. Now, what do you need in order to hack a human being. You need two things. You need a lot of computing power, and you need a lot of data, especially biometric data. But control of data might enable human elites to do something even more radical than just build digital dictatorships. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. Because once you can hack something, you can usually also engineer it. All of life, for 4 billion years, dinosaurs, amoebas, tomatoes, humans, all of life was subject to the laws of natural selection and to the laws of organic biochemistry. But this is now about to change. Science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god above the clouds, but our intelligent design and the intelligent design of our clouds, the IBM cloud, the Microsoft cloud, these are the new driving forces of evolution. And at the same time, science may enable life, after being confined for 4 billion years to the limited realm of organic compounds, science may enable life to break out into the inorganic realm.
All right. That was none other than Yuval Noah Harari, the minion of the World Economic Forum, the professor there. There you go. The professor, Department of History, the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Yeah, I know. Don't. Okay. Basically telling us that, hey, you know what? We are the last generation of God's creation, because God, apparently, God's creation wasn't good enough, isn't good enough, at least not for these mobsters, these Muppets, these godless bastards. I'm telling you right now, folks, if that's not good enough for you, if this isn't reason enough for you, then you're a mind-numbed moron. And you're not on my side. You're not on our side. You're not on the side of God. You're not on the side of freedom. You're not on the side of goodness. You're not on the side of morality. And as far as I'm concerned, you're beyond help. So I ask again, please go to HagmanReport.com, click on the top link there, A Crisis of Freedom 2022, written in the spirit of Thomas Paine, A Message to Freedom Fighters, and spread it everywhere, if you believe in that. If not, I get it. Sadly, I get it. All right, you know what? I want to thank our corporate sponsors, including and especially Lightstream, lightstream.com/Hagman. You know, how much money, I want to ask you this, how much money are you paying in interest on your credit cards every month? Is it too much? Then why not consolidate your credit cards into just one payment at a lower fixed rate and start saving money? Pay off your credit card balances and save right now with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. We still got to take care of business, so let's do it now. Let's do it right. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have a rate as low as 4.98% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. It's much lower than the national average interest rate. Hey, you're paying almost 20%. Take a look at your cards. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with absolutely no fees whatsoever. You can even get your money as soon as the same day as you apply. Now, here's what you have to do to take advantage of this very special offer just for my listeners. Apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I want to spell it out for you. It's LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/Hagman, and Hagman has two N's at the end. This is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 4.98% to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto-pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You'll be glad you did, and you will thank me later. All right. And again, I want to thank Lightstream for their sponsorship of this program and for hanging with us. We appreciate that. And you know what? I want to thank each and every one of you for your support. You're telling other people about this program. 1.4 million downloads last month. We appreciate that. And that's on just one platform, that being the audio platform. And folks, make sure you bookmark HagmanReport.com. That's Hagman, two N's, HagmanReport.com, for episode descriptions, important links within each episode. Please do that. And to remind everyone, yesterday we did not have an episode. There was an announcement, had no video to it. And if there was any link to any kind of video, it took you to the previous day's video. All right. Now, if it's Tuesdays, it's Tuesdays with Stan. StanDeo.com. That's StanDeo.com. Link in the program description box to StanDeo.com. It's always a pleasure to have him every Tuesday. And also, since we're talking about this, I was following as well. And I thought I kind of, in my haze of sickness, I thought maybe, just maybe, I was off a little bit in time. But I was looking at news reports of this massive solar flare that happened behind the sun. That's, I believe, Stan referenced last week. And it's kind of coming around again, So that got me thinking, aren't you glad you have an EMP shield? Oh, you don't have one? Go to EMPshield.com, use the promo code Hagman, and I guarantee you, you will be protected from, your equipment will be protected from these nuisance kind of sun deals. Or if somebody wants to get froggy and explodes or detonates a EMP, you know, above Kansas or whatever, or above your head, EMP shield will protect your equipment, your car, your generator. Get one for whatever piece of equipment or your house or whatever other piece of equipment that you need. That's empshield.com, promo code Hagman for $50 off, and you get more money off in addition to the promo code when you purchase in bulk. So go to empshield.com for more information. So I'm glad Stan's on with me right now, and I'm sure he's got a lot to talk about. StanDeo.com. And of course, as I mentioned before, let me show you this. Hang on. You know, Prudent Places USA. Okay, I've been looking at this for reasons I won't tell you now, but this by Stan and Holly Dale, as well as Dare to Prepare, and of course, Cosmic Conspiracy, Stan's best and latest and final work. It's my understanding. All right, outstanding stuff. Stan, how are you, sir?
I'm good this evening. Today was delivery day for the Dare to Prepare book, back in stock again, finally.
Yay!
The snow held it up over the weekend, but... you know, it's good to get here.
Wait a minute, you had snow? Yeah, I didn't think it snowed over there.
I thought it doesn't where we are usually, but yeah, we do have snow. Let me see. I took a picture this morning out the windows there, somewhere here.
It was not up to your shoulders, and it doesn't count.
No, oh well, it wasn't.
Well, that's dusty. Pretty. Okay, that's pretty.
Yeah. Okay, now. Aww. You were talking about the sun. It has been really active over the last week to 10 days. I want to address a couple of things about that. First of all, if you've got the show images page up, Eric, go to slide 41 to start with. Now, for your panic, this was taken in 2003 toward the end of the 11.8 year solar sunspot cycle. And this was a very active cycle back in 2003. But this was at the end of it, right? Now, what we've been seeing since the 15th is early, very early in this solar sunspot cycle. It's not even, you know, a third of the way to the maximum. And we're seeing things that are going to tell us later, we're going to see some mighty things. In fact, later might be 2 or 3 days. We'll look at that. That slide below 41, look at 38. Now, this is the current heliograph, which we go through every week. And it shows half of the sun wrapped around a bit. We can't see all of it, but this is what we can see kind of facing us. The backside one didn't work too well, so we could only see a little bit of the backside. And that bright region there in the upper left of this image is it's the active region that produced that super-duper flare. Now, I've got videos and animations of what happened on the 15th, plus what's happening now and something that already passed. Now, over on the right side of the screen image, you'll see minor kind of active regions that are kind of light green. They are bright white, like the one in the upper left corner. So if you go back over to which one we want, let's go to 39. You click on the slide itself, it'll show you an image of what was taken earlier today. And you'll see that there's a big flare on the upper right side of the sun going away from us. But it'll be back around in 14 days or so. Let's see, to the other side, about 17 days will be Earth facing us, that big loop on the upper right. But in the left is where that active region is now that produced, you know, the 800,000-mile-long CME solar flare on the 15th to the 16th of this month. Pretty impressive. Now, down in the text of that, by the way, this picture in red here kind of gives us a really good idea of the flares and things, better than, in my opinion, than the one we normally use, the 193 angstrom. But anyway, if you click at the word here after click, that's going to bring up an animation of the last 48 hours. And it might take, 30 seconds or so to upload it. But when you get there, it's going to show you what's happening currently in the last 48 hours on that site. Well, on the SDO site. I can't see it coming up yet. Anyway, it's trying. I won't hold you up for that, but that's something to look at to see that
there
animation.
It goes. Wow. I mean, okay.
All right.
Look at that.
Now, yeah, toward the end of it, you'll see the show of that flare right about now, upper right corner. Wow. Nice, snappy, flare and CME source there. Now, there's another one to see, which is the one that was on the 15th to the 16th. And that's up in slide 40. If you click on the picture first, I measured this, and the official measurement was like 400,000 kilometers or maybe 240,000 miles, but that's rubbish. This is not the whole picture of this flare that went out from the sun on the 15th. Now here you can see the sun and the actual size of that the sun's diameter is about 820,000 miles. So you can see that right here, it's 800,000 miles out, but it went even further than that. Another animation, click in the text below that. Let's click here to see the animation. And you'll find this starts out very impressively, but that's before the 15th. It's on the 13th in the very beginning of it. And then as it progresses, it gets up to the 15th, and it is impressive. Okay, you're seeing it there. And it'll be toward the midnight or toward the 16th, very closely. Yeah. Was that impressive?
Oh, yeah. That'll leave a mark.
Wow. Fascinating stuff. It broke up and went way further than the diameter of the sun. You can see that. The little white circle is the sun's diameter. And that path went out many times the diameter. I mean, you're looking at about 2 million miles. That's a big thrust. Okay. So the sun is misbehaving, as I've been predicting. The solar cycle is unstable. And we're so early in it that, we have to be concerned about it. Let's go over to slide 42 and click on that animation, which is further out, to show us how far that thing went before it dissipated. Get to that. Yeah. See how it starts out and then fades out after a couple million miles. Still, if it had hit us, the debris and solar wind and particles from that, it would have been impressive to our electrical grids and satellites and all kinds of things. So So when I tell you that we may be seeing a coronal mass ejection that produces a CME that lasts for hours and fries our grid everywhere on the planet, I'm not joking. And I'm very serious about the possibility. And I think seriously that the reason that the USGS and the Solar Dynamics Observatory at NASA, the reason they're not warning you to be careful is because in their position, officialdom, they don't want to create a panic, you know, panic buying of this or that or, you know, preparation or moving or whatever. So I'm telling you as an unofficial source, get prepared. And I can do that, you know, and not scare the whole population of the planet, but it's looking bad.
And wow. About this article here, when they said specifically that if that major flare halo CME had been Earth directed, that they said no question, it would have easily knocked out satellites, the power grids, cell phones, and everything else.
Okay, if you go to the page Holly put up this morning, she has an article on the alerts at the top right of the you know, the news section down there, and. Gosh, I just saw that you put up it's National California Day. Whoopee. Anyway, the alert says Sun's Tuesday far side eruption marks one of the largest coronal mass ejections in recent history. Holly says, had that CME been Earth facing, you wouldn't be reading this article. The article states if Tuesday's CME was directed towards Earth, it would have easily knocked out satellites, power grid, cell phones, and more. We are even more vulnerable to these storms today because of the advancements and dependency of our way of life to digital technology. Articles addressing this EMP threat are coming fast and hard as scientists see the increasing risk. It's like many things government does. They plant the seed and hope you pay attention, just what I was just saying, and prepare accordingly. Stan will, that she's writing here, Stan will address this on the Hagman Report tonight, which we're doing. And should our good get hit with a CME, we'll relegate everything Biden has done to America and the war in Ukraine unimportant. Yeah, you're going to be more concerned with staying alive. Oh, wow. Gosh.
I totally agree with that. I find it interesting that, you know, in Holly's book, I'm so thankful for this. I hear Mike Adams and other people talking about preparing. Well, how do you prepare? Especially today, how do you prepare? You prepare down. You prepare going back in history. In other words, you prepare not with an internet. You prepare as if you're going to have to be self-sufficient. So Dare to Prepare has a lot of good information on that, folks. Make Stan and Holly work. No, don't make them work. But, I mean, certainly, I say that. You know, make them pack the books up. But definitely get yourself a copy of Dare to Prepare. You will not be sorry. Okay. Go ahead, sir.
I tell you, it's fun unloading a truck full of those crate or those things.
I'll tell you what. Pallets of books.
Yeah, three pallets. Yeah, and you got to run them uphill in snow, so by hand.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, and oh,
yeah. Anyway, it's done, and so we will be getting the orders that are back ordered, and there are quite a few of them out starting tomorrow afternoon.
Good. Okay.
And yeah.
All right.
Okay. Now that's the sun, and definitely one of the most important things to talk about here. I had a really fun dig into Jared Kushner. You know, I've had him on my list of potential antichrist for a couple years now, several years. And I was going on the fact that his name was Kushner, because when I was discovering the Garden of Eden in Atlantis, I located the Asian Kush, not the Egyptian Kush, the Asian Kush with a K, which is Iran, basically. And Kushner means that family name is from the old Kush, and it meant furriers of, you know, of furs and stuff like that to make clothing and rugs and things. Well, to my surprise, I looked up a report on him, and his name is Kushner now, but his grandfather changed the family name when he came over from Ukraine, where we are looking at it in the news later. And he changed it to Kushner because it was not so Jewish, and he didn't want to suffer the persecution in this country. Now, if you look down at slide 53, you'll see what I'm talking about. After the Second World War, anti-Semitic immigration laws sharply limited the number of Jews allowed into the United States. In 1949, in order to increase his chances of obtaining an American visa, Ray's husband, that's Jared's grandfather, Yossel Berkowitz posed as his father-in-law's son, listing Kushner as his name on U.S. immigration paperwork and renaming himself Joseph Kushner. As a result, his son Charles was called Charles Kushner, not Charles Berkowitz, and his grandson was Jared Kushner. So, kind of indirectly from his antecedents, Jared Kushner does have Kushner blood in him, but it's interesting that he's functioning in the name Jared Kushner when his, and the Antichrist too is going to come in his own name. I wonder if it's going to come in the name of Berkowitz. Just a strange observation there. I don't know. But there is a piece there in the news desk of New York, something or other. I forget what it is, but it's the Kushner family history, from lying on immigration forms to becoming major Democratic donors, often seems at odds with the initiatives of Jared supports and the initiative Jared supports in his father-in-law's administration at that time. It's a good read and tells you a lot about that family. Now, Berkowitz. Jared Kushner, in slide 59, Jared Kushner and his friend, Avi Berkowitz, sounds like it could be a relative, you know. They went to college together, shared a room and everything. These two have been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. When you click on the text, you'll see the video and the article about the fact that he's been nominated for his work and his friend Avi's work on the Abraham Accords. And the Abraham Accords were not written by Jared Kushner or Avi. They acted on them. They, promoted them in the Middle East, went around the various heads of state and got them to agree to sign the Accords. And they're still doing that. But the Accords were started back in the time of Nixon. I think it was Nixon, 2005. Bush, 2005. And the information started being collected then toward an accord in 2005. And here we are 17 years later, just now seeing it start to happen. Now, so as I say, Kushner, I don't even think he signed the accord agreement that was signed by all the other people and President Trump, but he was the architect, along with Avi Berkowitz, of the Abraham Accords. And he's not stopped. If you look at, let me just get this thing here. You'll see a picture of Berkowitz there next to that slide. It's slide 60, but it's 58. Slide 58 is the one we want to look at. Tells us what young Kushner is doing now. On the backs of the Abraham Accords, Jared Kushner raises billions with a B and becomes Middle East power player as he creates a life outside of Trump. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean he's a billionaire, but he has control of billions of dollars there. He's doubled down on the links he created in the Middle East while working in the White House, reportedly courting regional powers for investment for his new private equity firm and founding an initiative to build on the success of his brainchild, the Abraham Accords. The Accords saw Israel normalize ties with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain in August of 2020, following decades of angst between Jerusalem and the Arab nations over the Palestinian question. So I guess the Palestinian issue was what delayed the appearance, and the signing of this Abraham Accords. But, this guy here, he doesn't fit all the bills at the moment that I wanted him to fit for Antichrist, but he's certainly a player in the coming Antichrist and New World Order, in my opinion. I just, he's just rising to power so rapidly. Now, is he like a military type person? Will he do well in that kind of environment? Or is he just kind of a Casper Milquetoast in the financial league that is clever with words and gets people to agree to stuff? But is he the Prince of the Covenant? I don't know. There are some thoughts about the Prince of the Covenant mentioned in Daniel, whether that's the Antichrist or the guy that gets the covenant together that brings the Antichrist on. I've heard two stories. Have you heard anything about that, Doug?
No, nothing. I'm relying on you, Stan.
Well, you know me. I'm very clued into all this kind of stuff and watching the news all over the place. But he's really great friends with Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who I have on my Antichrist list, and who, by the way, has been interviewed by Dr. Assad recently. I've got a slide or a video we'll click to in a minute, where Mohammed bin Salman is asked by Dr. Assad, because they're, you know, in a meeting. He says, how do you see yourself, MBS? And he says, do you remember Alexander the Great? And stop. Now, that meant he sees himself as a world power figure, you know, conquering nations and stuff. He and Kushner and MBS are on first name basis, you know, hi Fred, hi Sam, you know, Jared, and really close. So the two of them together may be, you know, playing into this Antichrist, false prophet, and Daniel, you know, Prince of the Covenant deal. So keep your eyes on these things, these three things here. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, gosh. Things are happening so quickly, aren't they?
They are. Extremely.
Now, in slide 56, I've got two groups of text. The bottom one says, see this, the Saud family may be Hebrew or crypto Jews. Now, why is this important? Because the Antichrist has to be from the tribe of Dan. Now, there were rumors running around for quite a while in the Saudi community over the last 10 years. And a book was actually written by a man about the fact that the Saud family came from a Jewish merchant at Basra posing to be, an Arab and from Muslim connections and stuff. But that in reality, he was from Israel. Now, did it say he was a tribe of Dan? I couldn't find that in the article. But if you read that article and the Lord thing says, see this, the Saud family may be Hebrew, you'll see a trace that was done by this guy. I think it was the one that wrote the book about him and about the Saud family. How it traces it from, you know, that merchant contact, you know, years and years ago, a couple of generations, down to now. Now, it's strange, but the author of that book, as I recall, was killed in Saudi Arabia.
Why?
You know, are they afraid to bring that out? Now, if you click on the text, you know, for that picture there of MBS with 666 on it, it will take you over to a video where that interview with Dr. Saud is. And he says, I'm here. He's Saud al-Jabari, former Saudi intelligence official, and Dr. Assad as well. I think it's the same thing. When it starts out, it tells you all this stuff. And he sat down with MBS, and this interview shows that. And it shows a lot of other things pointing to the fact that MBS is a front runner, in this guy's opinion, you know, former intelligence, that he is a front runner for the New World Order Antichrist. It's not just me that are seeing this possibility. And the Antichrist can be identified, but not revealed. Now, when we do what we're doing here, we can't identify him in our little small group of people. We can say, this is a guy who fills all the boxes, checks all the boxes. But that is not revealing. He has to take power and come into full-fledged, you know, reveal as, you know, leader of the world and that kind of stuff. Then the world, the people will see, and he will be revealed, and to the church as well. But we're a small group of people studying this, you know, you and I and our listeners. But I think it's all right for us to pick on who might be the Antichrist and record it in these videos that, you know, we store online and stuff for people to pull down and save, so that when he does reveal, you know, formally to the world, and if the church is not here at that time, which I think they probably would have been raptured, if he does do that, this information will be there for the people to study and realize that this guy and all these things that are pointed out in this article here, or this video, tells you to look out, don't fall prey to his, you know, his ways, his numbering and all the stuff he's going to do. So it's important that we look at this and store it. I think this video is good. You can store the link. I think you can even download it with people who got to download YouTube software. I think it's very important to do that with this particular interview. Just really important.
All right.
Now, next to that is, yeah, well, hey, well, it keeps us busy at night, doesn't it?
Yeah. Heck with bridge, you know. Well,
yeah.
Let's just do this.
dull and boring. Wow. Ho-hum. Yeah. Slide 57. Another video, which is closely aligned with this one, but it's not directly at Mohammed bin Salman, but it's an interview with David Guzik, G-U-Z-I-K, in slide 57. You can click on that that interview. And in the interview, you'll see that he talks about how we figure out when the Antichrist is revealed. And in there, it talks about what I was just saying about, you know, identified or revealed, you know, the meaning of that, and when does it happen? What are the signs of it? I think this is another classic video to put in your, you know, your repertoire. Listeners, just download this if you can and keep it to share with other people in home meetings and things like that. Those top six boxes are there on the show images page today. Were action packed with a lot of stuff on Antichrist and things. You know,
it is an intellectual exercise, I suppose, right? I mean, we're looking at this with the information we have at the time we have it, as opposed to anything definitive, but it's certainly a good intellectual exercise.
Well, it does tell us that there are world figures coming into the forefront here. To that tells us we're at that time. One of these, or a couple of these that we've talked about on the show images page in here, may actually be the Antichrist. And I think I've listed, I don't know, 10 possibilities. And even one that's dead, General Qasem Soleimani, should he be animated as a robot or as a clone of himself or whatever? I even put him as a possibility, even though he's dead. So it's as you say, it's an intellectual journey looking at these people, and it tells us we're very close to the time when the real Antichrist is going to be revealed to the world. It just reinforces how close we are, just looking at all these people and their activities and how parts of their lives fit the description of the Antichrist. What I'm having trouble with, by the way, is identifying the Assyrian, the young whelp that leaps out of Dan. That was why Christian was so interesting. This is because the Jews from Dan migrated over into what is now Aram, but it was called Cush at the time. So the young whelp would probably have come from the tribe of Dan when it was part of the Assyrian Empire. Yeah, Assyria. Well, you know, coming from the tribe of Dan in the north when it moved its position in Israel up to the north onto the border of Assyria, that would allow the tribe of Dan to supply us, an Antichrist. The tribe of Dan is, you know, I don't think they're even listed in the 12 tribes that are going to give, 12,000, Jewish Billy Grahams and stuff in the tribulation period. But Dan is not mentioned for some reason. And, the tribe of Dan is to bite at the heels of the other tribes, is to be a judge of them, try to pull them into line. And the flag or the image on the flag for the tribe of Dan is a snake that lies in wait to bite you. So there's a number of things that I see in that tell us that the guy is going to come from the Middle East somewhere. Could even be in Turkey, but Middle East kind of.
You know, yeah, I mean, I've read books or I know books out there, such as the case for the Islamic Antichrist, the case for there's so much out there, okay? It's really, your distillation of information is pretty interesting. Folks, definitely go to standeo.com, click on the show images page, and take a look at the contenders, because I think it's an important thing to do. And keep that information in mind. And remember, it's a fluid kind of exercise that's taking place here.
Well, as I say, it's a nice thing to discuss when you have meetings with friends in your home and stuff like that, to kick these things around. It's stimulating, and it's causing people to focus on world events in light of the fact that we're in the end days. It's a very good witness tool, in my opinion.
Yeah, indeed.
Slide 49. Despite the great efforts on the matter made by foreign minister to assist in their evacuation, this is Prime Minister Bennett in Israel saying this. According to the data I've received from them this morning, Bennett said a little over 3,000 Israelis have left Ukraine. But there are many thousands more who are still there at a time when airlines are already canceling flights. He accused the Ukrainian people of losing their identity, which for him and his colleagues is Russian, and described Zelensky as disgusting, corrupt, and faithless, having repudiated his Jewish identity to serve rabid nationalists. Now, if you look in the article, you'll see that in 1941, the Germans came in and killed all the Jews they could, you know, slaughtered them there. And then Jews moved back in or stayed there and weren't killed in the pogrom. But it takes on a tone of anti-Semitism in Ukraine, especially if the Russians continue and occupy and control Ukraine. Yeah, Russia plays the anti-Semitic card in Ukraine. That's the headline of the article. It just, wow. The mind boggles, doesn't it?
You know, with Ukraine, I find it fascinating. I just find that this whole global political dynamic fascinating. The Biden / Harris role in this, us sending, or Biden sending Harris over to Germany. And, you know, let's not forget about Biden's connections to Ukraine, Hunter Biden's connection to Ukraine and everything involved in that, in the energy deals, Burisma, and so on. Yeah, it's just, yeah.
It's very incestuous, isn't it? And, you know, we voted for President Trump, but in this research, I found out that since he was, you know, early in his rise to being a wealthy man, he was making deals in Russia to build, you know, hotels and a Trump Tower virtually there as well in the Kremlin, because all the money that was being, cash that was flowing out of Russia into investments. It was a very lucrative thing. So he spent probably 3 or 4 trips in Russia. And so he became acquainted with their policies and with the higher ups there. So maybe Russia is happy that he was there when he was president. I don't know. The Russian generals right now, there's 1, 2, 3 generals and a bunch of senior officers in Russia on the border to Belarus, you know, just above Ukraine, on a border town that's in Russia, Lubavitchia, I think it's called. And they were praying at the gravesite held there, you know, it's a ceremonial gravesite for the Lubavitch, for the Messiah that the New York Jews thought was going to be the Messiah. And they were praying there because the general said, we've seen the Trump family in New York pray there. And things, you know, good things happen, that the rabbi answers prayers. But it's not God that they're praying to, but they're putting prayers to these Jewish rabbis there on the border to Belarus. And they don't like the Jews. It's crazy. I don't understand the mentality of Russia at the moment. There must be elements within the military that don't agree with what Putin's doing there.
The neocon war apparatus, perhaps, in addition to everything else. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, hey, war makes good business. And I suppose if we could stoke the embers of conflict, let's do it as a neocon, right, would say. But I don't know. What do I know? The more I think I know, the more I realize I don't know anything.
Oh, I agree. Same thing here. You get to have so many facts rattling around in your brain cage there that you sometimes aren't sure that any of them will fit together into a logical scenario. But you got to do that. You got to put the little pieces up there and keep them fluid in your mind so that when the news says blah, 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 and events happen that might be fulfilling biblical prophecy of some sort, it goes click, 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 these pieces fit together. Ah, that's where we are in time, and that's been fulfilled. You know, Putin, he wants to reestablish the old Soviet Union. And Ukraine is a major part of that, but the other countries, neighboring, like Poland, some of the other countries there, he wants to get back the old Soviet Union. That's his objective. And for him not to take Ukraine now militarily seems inconsistent with his stated wish to rejoin all the Soviet Union into the modern Russia. And why Ukraine is so important, and it's rather strange, is because of all the minerals that Ukraine has. If you look at slide 54, you'll see that there's an article there written by Bill Crane, a political analyst, where he discusses why, you know, Putin wants to take Ukraine. It's for a number of reasons other than minerals, but certainly from to regain some of the old Russians that are still there that were part of the Soviet Union. But there's a lot of natural gas there, and that's important, obviously. If you click on the map that tells you about this article, it's the mineral resources, and it's like, if you look at all the dots, these are the things that he can get for Russia right now when they need it. You know, sanctions about money and that kind of stuff and oil really don't mean much to him if he's got access now then to brown coal, to oil and gas bearing regions, to iron ores, to titanium mines, manganese mines, nickel, cobalt, aluminum, copper, zinc, I mean, and mercury and gold. I mean, Ukraine is just a wealth of these mineral resources that are valuable. So you can see why he wants to put that back into his pocket there, into his bank book or whatever, to fund what else he's going to do in reuniting the Soviet Union.
Billions and trillions are reasons. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll stop there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, there are a number of issues which you can, that guy covers in the article. Some are political, some are ethnic, some major part of them are mineral resources. And Crimea, of course, when he got that a few years back, Crimea on the southern tip there of Ukraine, that was the breadbasket that fed the Soviet Union. So he had to have that for food. And now he's going for the mineral resources, you know, the metals and things and gas in Ukraine for energy. And as I've said many times, the universe runs on the exchange of energy. So control of the flow of energy is true power on this planet. And that's what he's after. And that's what the Chinese are after. And Biden certainly is not. Gosh. Canceling a pipeline that was our lifeblood. And a lot of other things he's done in the energy sector.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. As you know, I go to the Jerusalem Post and various other magazines coming out of Israel for news. And slide 46, there's an interesting one today talking about fulfillment of prophecy. They've discovered a new river in the middle of Jerusalem by accident. It's underneath a place, a building where the Knesset, various, you know, other meetings have been going on. And it's the river prophesied by Ezekiel, accidentally discovered in Jerusalem. You see a picture there in the article. That's it there. At first, they thought it was like a leak in the plumbing or something beneath where they were excavating under that building to make new buildings. And then they discovered, no, it's a water source, a natural water source with plenty of water. And down in the article there, it gives a quote from Ezekiel 47. He led me back to the entrance of the temple, and I found that water was issuing from below the platform of that temple. And eastward, since the temple faced east, but the water was running out the south of the Mizbeach, under the south wall of the temple. Then he led me out by the way of the northern gate, and led me outside of the outer gate that faces in the direction of the east. And I found that water was gushing from under the south wall. As a man went on eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000. This is Ezekiel, you're talking about an angelic figure that's telling him. I think it was the pre-incarnation of Jesus himself that's telling this stuff. And anyway, to see this water flowing, you know, in under the temple area on the city there, it's just, I sometimes wonder if the old temple from Solomon is on the Temple Mount or down in that southeast corner just outside the wall, because there's water flows there too. Anyway, just wondering.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And where was that there in the article? It said the 3-story building was originally intended to be a 6-story office building, but construction was halted in the 1947 War of Independence. It was chosen to house the Knesset of Israel after completion, housed the 1st to the 5th Knessets from 1955 to 1966. The construction was intended to create a Knesset museum. So a prophetic place for it, you know, to actually occur, the water flowing from underneath that, where the ruling, you know, body of Israel had its building and its meetings. Anyway, yeah. You know, in Genesis, let's see, Moses sent 12 representatives, each from the tribes, up into Canaan to scout out the land that was going to be the promised land. Remember the story? They went up and they came back, and 10 of the 12 were frightened to death of the giants they saw there. Yep. But two of them, Joshua and another one, said, look at all the huge amounts of fruit and grapes. You know, we had to carry it on poles to get it back. And it's a very prolific, you know, place to grow food. And, you know, for that reason, Moses favored those two guys. And the other 10 he wasn't too happy with, but because they were being chickens. But if you look at slide 48, just click on the picture first. Now, that is a strawberry. I mean, it is huge. And this guy grew the largest strawberry ever grown in the world there in Israel, in the promised land where the land is so fruitful. The article underneath that talks about that he went into the Guinness Book of World Records, quoting that it was a strawberry of biblical proportion. Now, if you see the word Moses there in white, to the right of that is another link, and that takes you to the link where it tells you about how Moses sent people into the promised land to spy it out, and you know how 10 of the guys were frightened and chicken, and how two talked about all the fruit and wondrous produce there. That's where it came from in the Bible, if you want to check it.
And those strawberries are the size of, I mean, for radio listeners, the size of softballs, some of them.
Yeah, well, the one that he, let me see, if you click on the text in the article, come on, I think it shows there's a video there to show you how big in his hand. It's like, I think it weighed, 10 ounces, and it was about 7 inches long. It's big. Mind you, you have that for a meal instead of a thing on your salad. I mean, that's huge. Anyway, it's fertile ground.
There was something, and maybe you can connect the dot on this one. You know, the Nephilim Mounds, Nephilim Mounds. Earth Tech, am I getting that right? The mounds like Ohio, the earthworks in Ohio, Nephilim Mounds? Is that what they're called, Stan?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I didn't know that. I thought they were just a giant mounds, but all right.
Nephilim, all right, okay. Well, whatever.
But, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
When I was there, I remember around the edges of those locations were strawberry. I mean, wherever these are found, the strawberries grew. Now, I don't. Can you offer any insight about that, or am I just hazed out at this moment?
I don't know. I didn't. I had never seen that information about the sites.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's for some reason I had written this down in my notes. Now this is going back a number of years, but strawberries were always found around the perimeter of the mounds. And I'm thinking, okay, strawberries, blood red, you know, or maybe it has nothing to do with anything. I mean, but there it is. So for what it's
worth. Well, strawberries are one of three that they mentioned in the biblical passage. Pomegranates were brought back from Canaan, and figs. But that's on the Hebrew side of things. I don't know. Where do we have other giant mounds? I don't know if we can count Stonehenge as a giant mound, but there's something in Ireland, wasn't there?
I don't want to say without at this point, but they seem to be pretty prolific if you look for them. To find, and I mean, but is that stupid?
And around the ring, the outside of it, not on top of the mound, right?
Well, yes. Around the, it would be around the perimeter of the mounds, plural themselves. Okay, so again, you know, is that just a thing, or is that a thing?
You know, I'll have to.
What is it? Doug, have you ever grown strawberries?
Not intentionally, Ollie. But,
dig a mound. No, sorry, go on.
Grow like weeds. If you don't corral them, you know, they send out runners And pretty soon they're all intertangled and you've got a giant mess. So when you said they're prolific, I don't know if you meant just in reference to the mounds or their quantity.
In reference, well, both, but specifically in the context in reference to the mounds. But I know what you mean. They plagued my rose garden for a while. So, yeah. And again, it could be just anecdotal. It could be something that's not, you know, is really meaningless. But nonetheless, I thought it was pretty interesting because I saw that in my notes and was curious.
Yeah.
All right. And folks, I'll just say this. Folks, send an email, studio@hagmanreport.com, or put your comments in the program description, or put your comments in the comments section at Rumble or Brighteon or whatever. We read those. So there you go. All right.
Yeah. Let's see here. We've had a bit of volcanic activity. And one of them that Holly showed me, she reported on our news page. The Tonga eruption in January produced some rather extraordinary statistics. If you'll look at slide 52 and 53, this all refers to what happened there at Tonga. But the eruption itself was in the neighborhood of what Mount St. Helens was in TNT yield, 5 million to 30 million tons of TNT equivalent. And that's just the preliminary studies that NASA has done on that eruption. Now that plume, if you click on the text, the picture gives you a nice big picture. You've got that there. But the plume reached up into the mesosphere of the upper atmosphere. So at that height, it was going to be transferring electric charges from the upper atmosphere way up there down to sea level and below. It formed like an electric cable, in essence, out of the plume of dust, conductive dust. And as a result, 590,000 lightning strikes occurred on Tonga while that was happening. And they peaked out at a certain point during the eruption when that plume reached up into the mesosphere. And it left a circular pattern, which is what's in the next slide to that, in slide 53. There's a video that shows 400,000 of the strikes at the center in a cluster, and the other 190,000 were spaced out across the eruption. But if you look in the picture of that, in slide 53, you see that the lightning strikes formed circular patterns, a circle within a circle, and right on the very top of the eruption cloud. Just an extraordinary pattern formed by these things. And you can click on the video link underneath that, and it shows you a time map. I forget what the very beginning of January, the 15th, I think it is. It shows you these lightning strikes until, bang, they just erupt like crazy. So click on that video, if you can, Eric, in slide 53. And you'll see that there were lightning strikes all around the island until the eruption started to put a plume up into the atmosphere. And into the upper atmosphere, bang, it just goes like gangbusters. Here we go. Wait for it. And where did it go? There. Now, that's really in a short space of time, 400,000 direct strikes from lightning. That must have been absolutely frightening to those people. You'd think the end of the world was coming, wouldn't you?
I would think. Wow, look at that.
Isn't that impressive?
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's amazing to see a graphic like that, but okay.
Yeah. Well, they've done well with that.
Asking if you saw the Etna.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the Etna explosion?
I did not.
Oh. Well, read it. The links on Holly's news page there.
Photo of the day.
I have it here, too. Go to slide 50 and click on the photo first, Eric. Slide 50. Click on the photo. And this was part of the eruption to Mount Etna, and zoom in right in the middle in that dark spot, and you'll see it's the face of a demon in it, two eyes and the outline of a triangular-shaped demon head. In the article, it says, is this reminiscent of the Lord of the Rings? You know, we have an evil thing in the middle of this. That's spooky, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see
that's
it?
A little, yeah, I do. It's a little creepy. Disconcerting, and it looks... I'm just saying, to the left of that on my screen. Oh, I don't know. That looks like a figure there. I'm not even like a face of an old haggard woman, if you will. In my just kind of if you squint and kind of turn your head, it's but not
a pleasant thing.
Yeah, but not as evident as the image you're pointing to. Wow, look at that.
And when these volcanoes erupt, I mean, like Tonga, we were just talking about, but then this one, we're going to see more of these and more violent as the Earth's crust readjusts. I think that our axis of spin is tilting. As I said before, last week, I think it was, I've taken my iPhone out with a little compass and things, and I've looked at the position of the sun at a particular time in the morning, exactly where it's supposed to be. You know, but where we thought it was supposed to be, looking with the compass. But if you go to Stellarium, which is an application which plots the position of all the planets and stars, etc., like real time, and I dialed in whatever it was, like 9 o'clock in the morning, and I said, all right, so the sun is supposed to be at a bearing of, let's say, 100 degrees from north. And I looked out the thing, and I put my compass here on the iPhone to 100 degrees. Whoa and behold, the sun was at 103. It was 3 degrees ahead of where it's supposed to be, which indicates a shift in the, well, the crust, at least, of the Earth. Maybe not the whole insides, but the crust is off by 3 degrees. And that kind of movement can produce earthquakes, massive earthquakes, and volcanic eruptions because of the stress on the surface of the Earth, the crust. And the associated positions of the moon during its cycle as well, putting, you know, gravitational loads on the crust. Now, that if you look at the article, this lightning storm, it was so horrific, was because it's called a dirty thunderstorm, and they don't fully understand it, but they believe it's because of the friction between ash particles. It creates an electric charge that sets off lightning strikes around large ash plumes. We saw that, of course, on the Tonga event. And it's kind of like a large natural Van de Graaff generator where you're carrying charges up to the top from the bottom and causing an imbalance in the charge from the surface of the Earth up into the cloud plume. In this case, it was up about two-thirds of a mile. So it was up about 3,500 feet. But it wasn't as high and as impressive as the Tonga one, but still. It's showing that these particles, and you've probably seen this when you run your feet across the carpet in winter, you'll generate a charge that'll leap out and bite you when you go to a light switch. It's equivalent to that, except we're using particles of dust. And at high speed, running next to each other, they strip off electrons and create a charge imbalance, just like a Van de Graaff generator.
Hmm. Okay.
Anyway.
I get the concept. And I appreciate that explanation, too.
An article I forgot to link to because it was in my Canada file. In slide 47, Chrysalla Freeland, the current Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, shows her Trudeau's Deputy Prime Minister, anti-trucker convoy, and proud of her Nazi collaborator grandfather. Rumors have been circulated for several years that Freeland's maternal grandfather, Michael Komiak, was a Ukrainian journalist with ties to the Nazis during World War II. And what a smug look. They're taking away those trucks. They're selling them at auction and keeping the money. It's like a Nazi regime. There really is. A very nasty one.
You know, I don't want to make light of this, but I will anyway. You know that, did you ever, I don't know, that episode of Seinfeld where there was a woman in a booth of the diner. Depending on the light, she looked different. That's every time I see a picture of her, that's kind of what I think. She looks differently in every picture or every video that I depending on the light. But nonetheless, now, not to make light of that, she is the minion of Klaus Schwab and, of course, the member of the World Economic Forum. And she is the, really, in my view, she's the jackbooted thug behind Justin Trudeau. She's a Valerie, in my view, she's a Valerie Jarrett to Trudeau. As Jarrett was to Obama, or is to Obama. So, yeah, I got a real problem with this individual.
yeah, behind the scenes, you know, you're not catching too much on the Fox and other things like that about, you know, the real cause, the real threat behind Trudeau. So who's driving her? Is it, you know, the New World Order or what? I mean, it's just so evil. I can't believe it. And they smile while they ruin livelihoods of all these truckers and their families.
You know, Tamara Lick was denied bail earlier today in Canada. And now she's reportedly Indigenous. And but all of these people are being denied bail associated with this Freedom Convoy. But yet the cop shooter is granted bail. And all of the other, you know, these violent criminals are granted bail. And these liberal MP judges are working for the Crown, are keeping the people, just like J6 protesters, January 6 protesters. Same thing, different country.
Absolutely. Yep.
And by the way, it's this Freedom Convoy, and folks, please understand this, it's coming here. What you see in Canada is coming here, and even with the financial penalties involved. So prepare. Go ahead, sir.
What are we going to do? I mean, I think that they've done all they can to irritate us and force a civil disorder, or, you know, revolution or whatever. When they pull that convoy thing on us here, we're allowed to have guns here in this country, not like Canada. And you got to wonder if, you know, they're going to force us into a rebellion of some sort, an armed rebellion.
You know, Stan, I don't want to necessarily pimp my own work, and I apologize for that term, but promote my own work, I guess, is a better way. But I wrote a, what's that? Did I get yelled at?
Yeah, Holly's just laughing.
Oh, okay. I thought, but I wrote A Crisis of Freedom 2022, A Message to Freedom Fighters. And look, I really believe that at this point, if we're beyond the time of picking a side, or we're beyond the time of deciding, how did I write it here? I thought it was really good. But in the spirit of Thomas Paine, I believe that we're at this hinge moment in history that we cannot subject that to overstatement. I mean, this is a time when we must not just decide to act, but act. We have to act, and we have to act decisively. Otherwise, by not acting, we've acted, and we're kind of giving up. So, but there it is right there, Crisis of Freedom. You can read it, folks, HagmanReport.com. It's on the top there. And I would suggest you do that. We got about 3 minutes left, Stan, so I don't want to take your time.
Well, that's all right. Let me comment. I want to comment on what you're saying there. I think that it underscores the need for a method of communication between people of like mind. The internet's not always going to be there. I mean, you know, was it the Russians that hacked into that?
There's no way to prove it, but we've had our first cyber attack
on large shipping or freight forwarding.
Expedited shipping Washington.
Washington State.
Since Seattle.
And so we won't always have the internet. And so shortwave probably, but then there has to be maybe some other way to notify people, like for the convoy, how to get together and how to get organized. Because at the moment, we're little islands all over the country. And that to me has been the big problem is to get your voice heard. You got to get them together. You got to be able to reach them somehow.
Boy, I agree with that. I always favored libraries at 9 o'clock Saturday morning, you know, that kind of thing. Something simple.
But if you live on the other side of the country, it makes it hard to get to that same library. That's
well,
the problem.
Yeah, but yes. I get what you're saying. And we have to prepare for this because I think the things, and by the way, I have no problem saying, you know what, we need to stand up, we need to fight. And protests, you know, peaceful protests are one thing, but when you bring guns, it's an entirely different thing. And I don't have a problem with the latter at this point.
Yep, I understand that. It's gotten to that point. I mean, our forefathers, when they kicked the British out, you know, for unfair taxation, various other things, it took an armed resistance to do it.
That's right. Well, Stan, we've reached the end of the program. I appreciate your time, and great job today. I'm going to be taking another look at the show images page with both the sun as well as the prospects of the Antichrist. Very interesting. Thank you. And Holly, appreciate you. Appreciate what you do.
God bless.
All right.
God bless you now. Take care.
God bless both of you. Have a good night. All right, folks, that'll do it for me. I want to say thank you to everyone. Thanks for your prayers for Randy Taylor. Hopefully he's going to be pulling out of his trouble. And good night. Until tomorrow. Stay safe. Good night.